Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tramp. Today we're going to learn the halachas of monetary damage. This is Simon Kuf Pei Gimel 183 in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. We're going to look at five basic concepts today. The number one is damaging another personal property, preventing loss to oneself, taxation and public burden, respect for another's property, and causing damage from your own property. Okay, let's take it from the top. So number one is damaging another person's property. May I harm? I know I'm not allowed to harm somebody else's property, but can I harm someone or their money if I intend to pay it back? So, like, you know what? I'll just damage this right now because I have a need for whatever the need reason is right now, and I'll pay you back later on. It'll be a transaction. The answer is no. It's forbidden to cause damage to someone's property, even if there's intent made that one's going to pay the restitution. Just as forbidden to steal as well, meaning, like, I can't say I'm going to steal from you and I'll pay you back. That just doesn't work. It's still prohibited. I'm not allowed to say I'm going to damage your property and then I'll pay you back afterwards. What if it isn't action, it's just speech which caused damage? So it is also prohibited. So for instance, if Reuven sells merchandise to a non-Jew and Shimon tells the buyer it is overpriced, even if it's true, it's forbidden since it will cause damage to his friend. That's considered nizkei mamon, damaging their assets. What about indirect damage? This is called grama, and it is Osir. In Beis Din, he is technically exempt from paying, but he is held liable to the heavenly court until he appeases the person he has harmed. And that actually might be more terrifying than human court, because in human court, okay, it's dealt with, it's finished. In heavenly court, that's a long time to have to deal with some of the issues, and there's no way of getting out of it at that point when one enters the hereafter. Moving to our second concept, preventing loss to oneself. So can one save one's own property if by doing so it'll cause damage to another person's property? So it depends. If the damage already started, it's prohibited to remove the damage by redirecting it to another's property. But when is it actually allowed to be done? So if it has not yet reached one's property, it is permitted to forestall it, even if the forestalling will divert it to somebody else's property. So can you give an example to make this a little more clear? So yes, let's say a river is flooding and you see it coming towards your property, you may put a fence, you may dam it so before it reaches your property, even if doing so will divert the river to somebody else's property and damage their property. But if it's already reached your property, you may not re-divert that water to somebody else's property to cause the damage. That would be the way this is done. And obviously we can think of other permutations of this in the financial trading world today as well. We move to our third concept, and that's taxation and public burden. May one bribe a government official to avoid housing soldiers if others will bear the burden? The answer is no. Offering a bribe in such cases is forbidden because it transfers your burden to others. Is it permissible to influence tax officers to reduce your taxes if it increases others' taxes? No, this is also forbidden. And such a person is considered a moiser, an informant. Just to understand how this worked. In the old days, it wasn't like the system of taxation that we have today, which is done in an equitable and transparent way, and the taxes are going for specific government services, which was there's a breakdown and one can talk about and negotiate and lobby in Congress. That we're not talking about that system. We're talking about where a punitive decision is made by the local governor, and they say that this particular town needs to pay a certain amount of money, and it's completely arbitrary. In such a situation, then the question would be like this: if they say there's 200 families living in this little the shtetl, and you say you bribe the government to avoid having to pay the tax, what is you're essentially doing is, in this arbitrary tax, is you're pushing the load onto somebody else. So one has to be very careful about this, and this obviously talks about the backwater situations of Eastern Europe and similar kinds of situations where it was not as transparent, and we're not talking about the dinner de malchus, the dinner of today as well. Is it allowed to surrender a Jew or his property to non-Jews? The answer is no. This includes both speech and action. Even just saying where his location is. What is the punishment for doing this? This is considered moiser, and a person has no share in the world to come. We're talking about over here where it's the arbitrary forces of a non-Jewish government. We're not talking about necessarily in a situation as we talked about in the previous simon where a Jew is testifying in court about a Jew. And who has stolen or has money which is untowards, and according to Torah law, would be liable to pay that. Being party to that is not a problem. We're talking about where one is sending a non-Jewish collector to go and take advantage of this Jew. May one inform on a Jew who caused him great distress or a sinner? The answer is no. Even if there's a wicked Jew, one is provokes and harasses a person, one may not surrender them or their property to the punitive forces around them. May you inform on an informer to save yourself? The answer is yes. So if someone informed on you, you can protect yourself by informing on them, is permitted to do so. We move to our fourth concept, respect for another's property. Is it permissible to walk through a neighbor's plowed field? Answer is no. Walking through it will damage it, and even if it was just plowed, and is forbidden. May one gaze at another person's field while the crops are growing? Answer is no. This is considered a concern of Ayin Hara. There's many different ideas of how Ayin Hara works, whether it is actually metaphysically just gazing at it causes damage itself, or whether when one questions the right another person has to such success, it opens up the divine judgment on that person, the accounts on that person. Lots of different ideas, but it is la halacha. This is brought in halacha. One has to be careful. Okay, similarly, can one gaze at another person? So if one's doing it in such a way that can cause them harm, and one's lusting or wishing, and that is clearly forbidden. May one observe someone else's business activities, even if there's no fear of ayin hara. So if the person does not know that you're gazing at them or watching them and doing the business, that is not allowed. You have to acknowledge that you are present, you are watching them as well. What is the proper etiquette upon seeing what someone else is working? So it is appropriate for a person to say, may you be successful in your task. It is you need to actually give them the bracha as well. Now, moving to our fifth and last concept today, that is causing damage from your own property. Is it allowed to be busy in one's own property in such a way that it'll cause damage to the property of others? You can just say, I'm just working on my property, I'm not doing anything. The answer is no. That means to say you have to avoid placing anything near the wall of your property which generates heat, vapor, moisture, like manure, or anything within 3 handbreadths, so roughly 10 inches from the edge of one's property. What about spilling water or drainage from the roof near one of the neighbor's walls? So this too must be a distance at least 10 inches, 3 tefachim away to avoid direct damage to the neighbor's property. May one pour out a pot of urine near the neighbor's wall? This is strictly prohibited. How much distance must be maintained when urinating near one's neighbor's walls? So if the wall is stone or unplastered, 1 tefach is enough. If it is a bare rock, no distance is required. And if it's brick or plastered, 3 tefachim must be kept as well. Again, these are situations where the sensitivity to the neighbors, the impact of one's actions, are very important. With this, we conclude. Have a wonderful and meaningful day.